Radio Influence. The future is now.
Good evening, everybody. It is Friday, July 27th, 2018. Welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Stink Frankly.
I never know what you're going to say. And I even gave you a warning yesterday to come up with something good. That was pathetic.
Stink. It's a good, though. It's a good week.
It is a good week. And I'm Beans.
There you go.
It's never good enough now. I have to come. Oh, goodness, I'm boring. Okay, well, hey, Frank, welcome.
Well, I'm happy to be back. I feel like this week was a lot better, although it was weird. I think that all the weirdness this week is just astrological, though. So I don't know.
Astrological how? What? There is a lot of stuff going on astrologically, isn't there?
Isn't there? I think tonight is the night that we have this unprecedentedly long blood moon, and then last week we had all of the planets that had aligned on there was a really crazy alignment of planets. I remember looking at it on my front lawn, just looking out and seeing like five planets on the left side of the moon. So I don't know anything about it in great length or depth, but it's just there's a lot of terrestrial happenings up there, or celestial happenings, I should say. And you know, I don't think that we're that far removed from all of that stuff. So I think maybe it plays a small role in all the craziness we're seeing elsewhere.
I totally agree with you. There is no jokes behind the fact that when there is a full moon, the emergency rooms get a lot more busy. That is like documented by every single emergency room nurse you'll ever meet in your life.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's crazy. I, you know, just while we're on that topic, even though it's not, well, it's sort of the dark to light motif. What did you notice lately? I don't know if I'm crazy, but have you noticed that Mars seems to be just way bigger and a lot more red?
I have no. It's a lot easier to see it. It really is. And it is it's so the colors in the sky are so distinct, especially this is why I love watching the night sky in spring and in fall, because that's when all the humidity is still not in. And in New York, as you know, then again, you're on the East Coast, so you know everything about humidity. There's such a haze, you can barely see anything at night. So that's why I love when everything dries up. You can really see what's going on, because not only can you see the color of these planets and these stars, but you can also see the very distinct twinkling and everything. It's really fantastic. But yeah, very, very good stuff. And it's Saturn and Jupiter have been closer than even they look like they're closer than Mars, to be honest. And I know that if you even have a cheap telescope with Saturn, you can see its rings, because I know my uncle, he does a lot of amateur stargazing and stuff, and he doesn't have really good equipment, but he's shown me. I've been able to see the rings of Saturn, and it's really remarkable.
Yeah, it is. The sky is beautiful. Speaking of natural weather events and things, there is a lunar eclipse tonight, I believe, that we can't see. But also, currently, if I look out my window, I've got crazy thunderstorms. So we're not going to be telling ghost stories, per se, but if you hear anything in the background, it's the weather outside. It's frightful.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot to talk about this week, a lot, which is great for us because we could go on and on for a long time. I think I want to start with this whole Cohen debacle and what's going on with Michael Cohen, and then we can get into Rosenstein maybe and some other things. What do you think?
I'm ready for it, because you already know I can't stand this doofus. He is this Cohen doofus, that doofy face. I can't stand him.
Look, a couple months ago, actually, it's almost 6 months ago now, you and I offline had a conversation about Michael Cohen, and it was way before they raided his office. I was kind of like, in my investigative work, blowing the whistle on Michael Cohen and saying, wait a second, guys, I'm really sorry, but I think that we have a problem here. And the reason why I said that is because of his connection to Felix Sater. Do you know who Felix Sater is, Frank?
Whatever I do know about him is through you. So I would love to get another refresher from you.
Okay, so Felix Sater, for those of you who don't hear the name very often, is one of the people involved in the Russiagate sort of Spygate scandal. He was a developer, a land developer, that was responsible for sort of brokering that deal with Michael Cohen for that property in Moscow in December of 2015 that Trump signed the letter of intent for. You know what I'm talking about there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I believe that made its way into the dossier, too.
Yeah.
So Felix Sater was this guy from Bayrock Group. He was this developer who was kind of always trying to work his way into Trump's sphere. He said he had a business card from Trump Organization. And it turned out, as I dug into him, because the special counsel was interviewing him, and it came out in the mainstream that they were looking into Felix Sater. And, of course, the mainstream media jumped to make the Trump-Sater connection. But I kind of jumped to say, well, who is this guy? And it turns out he stepped out to do an interview and kind of like clear his name in quotes. This man turned out to be one of the most seriously connected intelligence assets I've ever heard about in public, ever. He worked with the U.S. government for years. And I'll explain that really quickly. Back in the day, like years and years ago, he was convicted of a couple different crimes. Like he was convicted of like, money laundering and kind of monetary crimes. But he was also convicted of like physical violence as well. And the government ended up using him as an asset. And instead of making him pay restitution to his victims, as would have been required, Loretta Lynch in the New York AG's office decided that he wasn't going to have to do any of that because he was too big of an asset for them. And when Loretta Lynch came up for confirmation, these are the questions that they were asking her about Felix Sater. This was way back. He was in those confirmation hearings back then.
Mm.
Turns out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, this dude, like he like negotiated back stolen nuclear, like nuclear issues, and he used satellite phones to trace Osama bin Laden. He used his contacts to do all kinds of crazy high-level stuff for the government. He also happened to be friends with Michael Cohen since when he was a child.
Mm.
Now, Felix Sater, when it came to Trump, was sort of disavowed by Trump way back, I think it was 2006 or 2007. He did something really shady down in Florida, and Trump was like, I'm sorry, sometimes you just don't know people until you know people. And he was basically adamant about cutting ties with him and not doing work with him anymore. But Michael Cohen was introduced to the Trump Organization as a whole through Felix Sater. That's how Cohen gets into Trump in 2007.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that that's how Cohen and Trump even started their relationship, this Sater guy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So it's almost as though this was seeded years ago. You know what I'm saying? So Cohen and Sater are very close. During the campaign, Sater is emailing Michael Cohen in a very, again, the word overt is going to be used, in a very overt manner, saying, hey, I'll get Putin to help Trump. We'll get our boy elected. I spoke to him. Let me broker this. All kinds of crazy overt emails about Putin himself helping Trump to become president of the United States. Ivanka can come sit in his chair. You know, craziness. So when, and Cohen's work going back and forth with him, sometimes sort of standoffish, like stop talking to me about this stuff, sometimes kind of playing off of him in some way. And I start reading all of this and putting things together, and I'm like, hey guys, sorry, not sorry. There's something seriously off with Michael Cohen. And then his apartment gets raided and all that raid happens, and everyone's like, this is outrageous. And I'm like, hold on a second. The reason why they were investigating Michael Cohen is because the special counsel was investigating Felix Sater. The special counsel started investigating Michael Cohen because he was the target of the emails, and they found all these shady business deals with Michael Cohen behind the scenes, the taxi medallion company, the kind of tax evasion stuff they're looking into, and that's why they went after Cohen, and that's why it was referred out. Now, I have a, if you listen to that tape that was released, that nonsense, useless tape, and I promise I'll let you talk in a second once I get this background.
I am all ears right now. Don't worry about me.
If you listen to this nonsense tape that came out the other day and you hear Trump and Cohen kind of for the minute and 30 seconds or whatever it was going back and forth about business, and we'll talk about the financing thing and the cash thing, which was a non-issue. You can hear in their relationship, it feels to me as though, quite honestly, I don't think Trump had any knowledge of what Cohen did on a personal level. And I think that was by design. I don't think they were friends. I don't think they were close. I think that it was a purely business relationship and a don't ask, don't tell when it came to Cohen's private dealings, because Cohen was doing some shady crap. Sorry to say. So I think that the fact that, and this is one of the things that clued me in, right before inauguration. Now, during the campaign, they distanced themselves from Cohen as well. And a lot of people didn't pick up on that, that there was a firm line drawn between Trump's campaign and Michael Cohen. He worked for the Trump International Company as sort of like a senior VP. During, right before inauguration, Donald Trump said to Michael Cohen, here's, I want to bring you into my administration. Can you do me a favor? You're going to have to step down from Trump International. He did. Trump never offered him a position and never hired him back at Trump International. And I can only say there was a reason for that. And Trump knows everything. Everything.
This is all new layers of information I never was able to put together and plug in. I've heard a couple of your background stories on Sater, especially as this was starting to develop for you on your channel. But this, just going back and just seeing that the long ties with the government, long tie. I mean, being brought up in the confirmation hearings of Lynch herself, it's very, very telling, because there was a lot of overt attempts at linking people together, even if it's just rhetorical, because that's all it was. Nobody ever took any meetings. The only thing that people have to rely on is this damn Trump Tower meeting from June 2016. And it's not, there's nothing here. And when I'm looking at these tapes now too, the only thing I was thinking to myself, you know, without any of the knowledge that you have, I'm thinking to myself, I've never heard anything like this. There's nothing of importance on these recordings. It's just so gross for me to watch this unfolding on national television every night, to watch the tarring and feathering of this man, Trump. It's like they're like parasites just pecking away at him, exposing private, ill-gotten conversations. This is his own lawyer. Why the hell was he recording his client? And why is he handing it over now? I mean, there's nothing even in it. It's like the Comey memos. There was nothing in it. Somehow they were able to get a special counsel launched off of the coattails of it. But there's nothing in it. This is like watching a crow pecking away at a body. It's unbelievable. I don't know
how, like, God bless the man for being able to deal with this on a daily basis and still do his job that we elected him to do. It takes a special person to be able to put up with this nonsense. Those, you know, listen, we don't know where those tapes were made, if it was in New York. Now, that tape was made during the campaign, but we don't know if it was in New York, what state it was in. Most parties have one party consent where only one party needs to know that they're recording, and that can be the person doing the speaking on the other side. I don't understand what there was to gain releasing this. It's useless. You know, there's nothing there. There's really nothing there. And to be quite honest, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Like, nobody cares about this, really.
It's been a ratings flop. It's been complete ratings flop. And we know that this is all about ratings, because I covered this last night for a little bit. Chris Hayes, MSNBC, admitting he would love to cover what is supposedly, according to the previous administration, the number one national security threat for the United States was climate change. He said in a tweet he would love to spend more time covering climate change, which is supposedly the thing that is going to end humanity itself. But he says it is there's a palpable ratings drop off whenever we do it. So it's really interesting to hear and I say this very loosely, a news guy say that, well, here is a story over here concerning a subject that is going to, according to them, destroy the planet and erase the species off the face of the earth itself. But they're not going to cover it because it's not a ratings catcher.
Oh my God.
Is that a news network or is that just Teen Vogue?
Lord. It's horrible. It's horrible. It really is. Like,
voyeurs. They're voyeurs. This is the most voyeuristic group of people I've ever seen in my life. It's just so gross. They had Barack Obama on a hot mic engaging in pre-election haggling with Vladimir Putin through an intermediary on something as dire as missile defense in Europe. But these clowns are so unstoppable in their voyeurism with these meaningless memos and these meaningless recordings that lead to nowhere. Now they're going down to obstruction from tweets.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they're saying, yeah, I know. And the whole obstruction case, I mean, we spoke about this a couple weeks ago. When there was the hearings about the mid-year exam OIG report, the Democrats laid out clearly all of the reasons why it was a good idea to fire James Comey. The Democrats laid it out clearly for us. You know, so this obstruction nonsense, especially given that Rod Rosenstein signed one of the last FISA warrants. I mean, the whole thing is just it's disgusting. And to see the bias in that, like one of Rosie on Twitter at Almost Jingo, she came out with something really awesome. Actually got retweeted by Dana Loesch, which was cool. How do you say her? Lash? Loesch? How do you say her?
I think it's Loesch.
Loesch, yeah. So basically, she compiled a list of clips, which is what she does best, of when Obama, embarrassed a reporter who was there inside the White House interviewing, asking questions that were just inappropriate, I guess, at the time. And the media and they threw her out. And then another one on the tarmac, which they destroyed her. They dragged her away kicking and screaming. And they were like saying how well he handled that. Meanwhile, the president says you're not allowed to come to this press briefing because you're disrespectful and rude. And I don't want to deal with you. And the media goes on and on about the freedom of the press and how it's being destroyed. And oh my gosh, the humanity.
Here's what going back to what you're saying before with the collusion, I mean, with the obstruction. This is what I asked last night when we brought up the Twitter thing. If we have Andrew McCabe before a congressional committee, right after the firing of James Comey, saying under oath, I believe, that not only was the FBI adequately resourced, they had no lack, they had no want of resources in manpower, in money, whatever the hell it was, they're adequately resourced. That was the quote he used. Not only that, they did not skip a beat. There was not a moment's delay. There was not a heartbeat that was skipped in that Russian collusion investigation. So if you have that coming from Andrew McCabe himself, who just filled the void of the recently fired Jim Comey at the time, saying that nothing was delayed even a moment and not a dollar. They are not in need of a solitary penny to be able to finance the investigation. Number one, where the hell's the collusion? Where's the obstruction there? Number two, now that we are over a year and change in the future and everything as it continues to go on, Robert Mueller is praised as a hero by so many people. Nothing's in his way. There's more slow walking on the other side from the DOJ than there is anything standing in the way of Robert Mueller. He's been able to go wherever the hell he wants. And you're telling me that after all this time and all the names he runs out there, the two dozen Russian names and blah, 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 and the whole way, every time at every turn, it needs to be reiterated. There was no willing American parties here. Not one vote was changed and outcomes were impacted. If that is what we are seeing, then you're telling me that an investigation that was that had never skipped a beat and never had anything in its way that has been turning up names and the outcome is just not what the other what the DNC hoped it would be, collusion and evidence that Russia and Trump were working together to steal an election. Then where is the obstruction? What are you talking? And this is it got down to something very, very, very basic and primal for me last night. What we're looking at here right now is, and I don't know the nature of Mueller, and I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We can all speculate and we have our theories and whatnot. But what this is coming to me from a party position, from a media position is this. There has been a reality, a fantasy that has been turned into a verified reality, that there is nothing, no other option, no other alternate view of the world and series of events that we have witnessed over the last couple of years can compete with. And that reality is Donald Trump is an illegitimate president who colluded with a foreign power to steal the presidency. And because that is a reality, a fact of life that nobody will accept any other competing view of what happened. Even in the lack of evidence to support their claims, because they created a reality that is unquestionable, the lack of evidence only proves that there is obstruction. Because if they haven't found what they know is true, then obviously someone is keeping it from them. And it has to be Trump. It has to be this one and that one. That is the psychosis we're dealing with right here. But even when they don't find evidence, it's not going to dissuade them because they've already accepted a fantasy as reality. So if they can't find what they need to prove their fantasies correct, then they just have to rely on believing that it's been obstructed and they are being kept from what they know is the righteous conclusion that they've been searching for.
Very, very detailed analysis there. And I always say to myself, like, what part of these people believe this crap and what part of them are playing the role of believing it? But in typical, like, if you ever want to just sit there and scratch your head for a little while, go to Seth Abramson's Twitter. That's all I'm going to say. Everybody can take it upon themselves if they like to take a look over there. But outside of that, the president has taken this nonsense that they're continuing to sort of push out there, and he turned it around in a very interesting way. I don't know if you saw this the other day, but he tweeted the other day, he said, quote, "I'm very concerned that Russia will be fighting very hard to have an impact on the upcoming election. Based on the fact that no president has been tougher on Russia than me, they will be pushing very hard for the Democrats. They definitely don't want Trump." In response to that tweet, the Washington Post literally came out with an article, the title of which is, "Without evidence, Trump claims Russia will be pushing very hard for the Democrats in 2018 midterms."
That's brilliant.
How much more can you ask for from this man? The troll level is like obscene. These people don't get it. They fall for it every time. I laughed solid for 5 minutes when I saw this. Legitimately, I was beside myself with glee. I don't know.
You brought up just a few minutes ago about how you don't know how any one person can take what this man is taking. And I'm not a person that usually rely, and I consider all different types of things, both seen and unseen, you know, occult type of stuff, astrology, mysticism, religion, whatever the hell it is. If there has ever been a time that I would have considered divine providence as being a player in any kind of a unfolding scenario, it would be the last couple of years. I know this is a very flawed man, and the only reason why he was given any chance of winning is because the arguments of morality and all that stuff had been surrendered a long time ago with the types of candidates that were being put out there. I mean, for God's sake, anybody who's trying to get these personal scandals of Donald Trump to hurt him after you just campaigned for a Clinton after years of calling Ted Kennedy the lion of the Senate. I mean, you're talking, this is the party of the Kennedys and the Clintons. and you want us to take your word on we should be appalled by the personal life of Donald Trump? No. And I really think that there is nobody, anybody else would have had a stroke by now of what has been relentless. I don't know. I think he really think that he's the only one with the intestinal fortitude to do the task at hand. And what that task is just merely turning the tide so that some we can the baton could be passed. Whatever he's meant to do in office, and I didn't know what it was, but right now I am confident that it is it's going to be the right things. Whatever he's meant to do is only the start, the first phase of what is having to reverse over 100 years of really, really awful ideas. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. No, I agree with you 100% on the divine intervention thing. We are quite honestly and obviously at a crossroads, or were, and we're starting to kind of realize it more and more every day. We're living through, Frank, some of the most, in 100 years or 50, 75 years even, they'll look back at this point in our history and it will be, you know, one of the most important transition points we've had as a nation in our history, for sure. And I don't say that to be important or self-important or for us to be self-important, but we sort of are really kind of holding the torch of liberty moving forward for this nation and the world even. It is definitely the, you know, I can't stress enough, just he's a flawed man, but he's just like anybody else. And he is genuine and he cares about this country. He didn't need to do this crap. This is not like a Donald Trump campaign ad. I'm just speaking from the heart here. He didn't need to do this. He didn't have to do this at all. And he did it anyway because he needed to fix what he saw as a big problem with this country. If you just take a look at what he just did with the EU and trade, do you know, like, I'm sure you do because you're really into this stuff, what a global prosperity, like in terms of prosperity, what this will do for the global economy?
It's all, I'm not a very economically, you know, as far as finance goes, I refer to other people, but what I do know are the basics. I do know that tariffs are essentially a tax on the American consumers. I understand what tariffs are, and I've always been wary of them just from a basic understanding of it. I've had people try to coach me through how they're necessary in some respects when you're dealing with adversary nations that are trying to flood markets with cheaper goods and destroy destroy incomes and destroy the American worker and stuff like that. I understand that, but to see this, what's going on in the EU, first of all, it's another doomsday. Another doomsday clock has been pushed back a half hour from midnight now. So we're supposed to be engaged in World War III with North Korea by now. That is the farthest from a reality that it's ever been since the Korean War. Now we were supposed to be engaged in World War III with Russia, even though at the same time there are the people who got Trump in office, that never made sense. But that doesn't seem like that is going to be anything that we have to deal with. It looks like Iran is next on the chopping block. And as some people said, perhaps Israel comes up after that. I don't know. But what I do know is that all of the doomsday scenarios, right down to the trade war with China that has not really destroyed the world, and talking tough and getting real with the EU, talking tough and getting real about NATO and what its intended purpose was, and why, and the hypocrisy that's going on in places like Germany, where on one hand everybody's questioning whether or not Donald Trump is in the pocket of Russia. On the other hand, the United States is footing most of the military bill in the EU to protect Europe from Russia, because NATO is an anti-Russia organization. At the same time, European countries are getting most of their energy needs coming from Russia.
Not in this deal.
And this is what I'm talking about. And not only are we looking at this, we're looking at elimination of some tariffs altogether.
Yep.
And it's just, I don't know why. And just today we get the reports of second quarter GDP 4.1%. This is coming from what we were being told during the Obama administration, that we should get used to 1.6% growth as being the new normal. We were being told that we should get used to 1.6%. This should be a time where everybody, you know, unbuttons the top button, sits back and says, you know what? Maybe this is a time to celebrate. Maybe we should get back into the USA Mighty Ducks kind of a view on the world and just be happy. Maybe there's something to actually be hopeful about. You know, it's not like we're out of the woods. We're still living under crushing debt and an awful amount of spending. But everything, if you get away from the tapes and you get away from the porn stars and the Playboy models, things are going well.
Yeah. Ooh. The thunder.
I like it.
Yeah, things are going well. It's freaking awesome. I don't know. I mean, you know, today, even I got a story from a friend of mine who said that they were in they're out in California and they were at work around there, all their liberal friends, and the conference was going on about the GDP being 4.1%, and everyone was like, wow, they were even saying this is pretty amazing. And then the question at the end was shouted out, what do you think about Michael Cohen? And they were all like, what the hell? Like, they were like, what's going on with Michael Cohen? Like, nobody cared. They just were happy that our country is doing well. And, you know, you can be America first. You can have patriotism and be pro-America. And like I said last night, I was co-hosting YVA with Your Voice America with Bill Mitchell, and it was really cool. And we were talking about this, and I was saying, you don't have to be an adversary of everybody. There can be prosperity and sovereignty for each nation, and you can get along with other nations and make deals and be prosperous together. That's the way you keep global peace. And the fact that the EU is in this position to negotiate these tariffs, just again, as an aside, sort of proves why it's really bad to take a bunch of individual nation states, lump them into some big charter and say you guys aren't allowed to negotiate your own trade deals. It really hampers everybody. And it's a reason why globalism doesn't work. The EU is, and especially when it comes to trade, is a perfect example of why globalism doesn't work.
Yeah. In fact, globalism, you look at the EU, and I try to explain to people that if you look at our country and you look at our federal union over here, and then you look at the EU, it really is similar in many ways, where we have 50 individual republics pretty much set up that are strung together by a larger and a little bit more simplistic and supposed to be smaller federal government that assures certain things and goes and negotiates international trade while making sure that trade between the states are free and open, and also providing for common defense. Obviously, we've gotten far, far away from that. But the reason why this is for the same reason why Europe, I mean, I always look at Europe, and before I even knew what the EU was, and I knew how little sovereignty European nations actually had, I looked at Europe the way I think my grandparents did, where, you know, you have this very, very special continent where there are all these nation states that are all in their same – you identify them as European. You know, when I think of Italy, I naturally start thinking of neighboring countries. I think of Switzerland and Austria, and I think of Spain and France, and I think of all these countries because I just think about their neighbors, and I understand, okay, that is Europe. But at the same time, I always knew Italy is Italy. It had the lira, you know, the franc. You know, they had their own currencies. They had their own cultures because those are ethnically European states, and they are actually really, that's what they were. And then over here, we don't have an ethnic union. We have a society that's based on a creed, which is the Constitution. But still, the 50 states, the reason why they're supposed to be sovereign is for the same reason why we once looked at Europe as a collection of sovereign states that were, you know, overall European. And that is because different regions in the world, different regions in this country, they come with different types of people, customs, different types of agricultural and professional lifestyles, whatever the hell it is. If they're a mountain town or if they're a city, are they farmers or are they, you know, are they lumberjack? Whatever the hell it is, everything changes from custom to accent to the way people speak to the way people look at life, their religious affiliations. And because of all of those changes that come from state to state, you know, there's no real difference between the proximity of New Jersey and Pennsylvania than there is, you know, Italy and Switzerland. But they're ethnic, they're culturally different and all that stuff. That is the whole point here, is that you want to be able to assure that people are doing exactly what the hell is good for their locality, while understanding that the overall purpose of it all is to keep a, you know, keep our overall goals in mind and the culture of democracy and all that. That's the thing that gets me the most, that's being lost here, that we're actually similar to Europe in that respect, where things change for when you cross state lines. You know, I don't have too much in common with people in Wyoming. I don't know what the hell it takes to, you know, think about the Amish. But we all share the same national borders, and it's important for that same reason. You know, somebody in West Hollywood, they would probably want the Amish to live exactly like they do in Anaheim.
Yeah.
You know,
try to take those people from West Hollywood and force them to live in Amish country as refugees and see what happens. They're not going to, you know, they're going to bring their culture in and try and push out the Amish. I mean, it's just, you know what I'm saying? So yes, I agree with you.
Demand to be fed. They're not going to feel, they're not, if you took somebody out of Los Angeles and put them into Amish country and tell them that they actually had to work a full day to go and
technology.
That would be culture shock, and they would demand that something change, and they have a right to internet access, and they have a right to, like, no, this is how we do it over here. If you don't want to be here, leave. And I think that's the big thing that's coming out, especially now around the world. I think that is what 2016 really signified. Started with Brexit, it ended with Trump, and now you're looking at Italy pushing back, Hungary pushing back against unchecked immigration, about being able to stake their claim to more of their own financial success in the future. This is what everybody needs to do. They need to be able to reconnect with their own way of life again. It's the one size fits all approach is just not working.
Agreed. Hey, Frank, I don't know. I'm super excited about this. Guys in the audience, because you guys love the show and you listen to the show so much, we have a sponsor to help us pay for it. Yeah. It's great. The name of the company is Sunbasket. They deliver meal kits right to your door for healthy cooking. So it's basically farm to table. It's really cool. I've been looking into it. I'm going to be trying it within the next week or so. I haven't gotten a chance to try it yet, but it's basically like you can pick from any sort of diet. So I don't know if you're very big into, you know, paleo or whatever. How do you eat, Frank? Because you're a healthy guy.
If I had the self-control, I would go 100% paleo, but I like Haagen-Dazs too much. So I keep some ice cream in my life. Because of course paleo is removing all inflammation causing foods like grains and dairy and all that, legumes. So I 100% that would be amazing. If I didn't have to worry, if somebody would bring it to my door, that'd be awesome.
Well, that's exactly what they do. They actually do bring it to your door. It's really cool the way it works. You go on the website, they have like, you can pick a different, you know, any kind of different meal plan you want. For example, they have paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean. They have like a family option, so you can actually get your kids kind of involved with the whole thing. And what you do is you pick from 18 different recipes, and then they deliver the food to you. Everything's pre-measured. All you have to do is prep it up. And it's like an award-winning chef that creates these recipes, and everything just gets delivered to you. And it's different. You know, there's a lot of these sort of subscription type food things, but none of them are clean like this that I've seen anyway. This is, and none of them let you pick, like I picked paleo because I really, really, really am a huge meat eater, and I'm excited. I'm like, yes, I can just cook. So Go to sunbasket.com/darktolight to learn more about this and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/darktolight for $35 off. sunbasket.com/darktolight and enjoy yourself a clean, organic, healthy bit of food.
I just love the name. I love Sunbasket.
It's a nice, happy, like, yeah, it just, it sun, natural sun, grows the food, no Monsanto GMO crap going into it, right into your little basket, which you take home and onto your table.
Yeah, I just want to eat whatever's in the basket without cooking it. That's what it makes me feel like. I just want to start eating everything raw.
You know what? Honestly, how do you like your steak?
I like it pink. You know, I like it. I don't like it. My brother loves it almost like rare. But I, as long as it's tender, as long as it melts, I don't care what the hell it looks like. I just can't stand when it's tough.
Yeah, that's bad. I'm a rare girl. I like my meat rare. And I know that we're going to have some vegans in the audience who are going to get very upset with us right now. Please don't. I just enjoy myself a steak more than any other meal in the entire universe. You have, I'm sure in your day encountered some nasty vegans in your day, I'm sure.
Me? Yeah. Well, some of them, not so much nasty, but they get a little pushy. They get a little pushy sometimes, and I love sparring with them mm-hmm. a little bit. But it's whatever. I know some people that do it because they have to. Maybe they have a condition that they want to be able to correct, and they got to clean some things up. But other people that do it because of like animal rights reasons. That's when I'm just like,
I don't know. Right. I wonder if they're watching them taking that broccoli out of the ground to make sure they're treating that living thing with respect. I know that animal abuse is a big problem in like slaughterhouses and stuff. I'm not denying that. It's horrible how some of these animals are treated. But at the core of it, you know, we have to eat living things. Like, it's just how we transfer energy. And
you know, I'm glad you bring that up because I love meat. I love fish, meat, poultry, whatever the hell it is. But I really do have a problem with the industrial scale slaughter. I really do think that maybe I'm not going to suggest that my feelings on the subject be turned into law. But I wish that it was a little bit more of, you know, meat being a local delicacy where if you're going to eat this stuff, then you're going to get it from local sources that are, you know, that are actually involved in the nurturing and the raising of cattle or chicken or anything like that, that are living full lives. And that, you know, when they're slaughtered, it's not like this awful concentration camp scene. Yeah. They're just kept together. You know, I hate the idea of these factory level slaughterhouses so that meat can be shipped all over the place, and it's just these animals are born to die and they have had no real experience with outside. Yeah.
You know, I'm sort of glad we're talking about this in a way. There, in no way did I expect this to become some kind of like show like we're doing right now with animal rights and stuff, but I have to say something. I do agree with you 100% that whatever we're eating, we're consuming, whatever was last sort of impressed upon that little, you know, that life force, I feel like you ingest that and it sort of becomes a part of you. There are, in Japan especially, I think it's Japan, Wagyu beef is raised as though they're queens and kings of cattle. They are pampered with an amazing diet. They have beautiful, full lives. That meat costs hundreds of dollars for just a steak because of the quality of the food it's given. That we have come so far in this country away from pure, natural, organic food to the point where we have to label something natural for people to know it's not tainted. And I think that there's a very strong argument to be made that we need to really rein in our food system, which we could go on for a whole different episode with what's been going on with that. But I am absolutely for the humane treatment of animals. If that's your argument for being a vegan, I can't punish you for that. However, I do like to eat meat. It's necessary for vitamin B12 naturally. It's my argument. I have it. That's it. I like my steak.
Yeah, it's, it, you know what is it, in a perfect world, In a perfect world, all of our meat would be procured like they do in Avatar, where they shoot down an animal and they run over there while the animal's dying and they're like, "Thank you, brother. Thank you for meat." You know, and they're like, there's an exchange and a gratitude there, but it's just not. We're so far away from that, and it's you know. And let me just say, there's a lot of great local farms over here in New York that do the same thing. Last year, around October, I went in on a fifth of a cow with a
That's
couple
great.
Of friends. And these are grass-fed, hormone-free, free-range animals that have been able to, you know,
graze.
Yeah, graze, do their thing. And that's it. It's local, and we know the people who were raising the cat. It's not coming just off an assembly line somewhere in California or something like that. It's a little bit more. It's a little more acceptable to me. You know,
we have to support our local farmers. You know, like I said, I could do an entire show with you about what's happened to farmers in this country. Our local farmers care about what they do and how they raise their. I'm sure we have some farmers in the audience. Thank you for everything that you do for this country and for, you know, doing things responsibly and caring about what your family has been doing for probably hundreds of years. This was a good little segment. I had fun with this, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, what do you want to do? I'll give you a flip of a coin. Oh, and thanks to Sunbasket for spurring that great conversation on. I'll give you a flip of a coin. Would you like to do Rosenstein contempt or Roseanne Barr interview?
Oh, man. Roseanne, there's so many good things to be said about that Roseanne interview. And Rosenstein or Stein, whatever the hell, if you want to talk about that, I would see benefit in both, because I really enjoyed the interview with between Roseanne and Hannity. And if we do Rosenstein, I would be able to learn a little bit more from you and ask some questions. So it's a draw for me.
We have 15 minutes left. Let's start with Roseanne, see how far that takes us. And we'll get to Rosenstein after, because I love Roseanne so much. I can't even, she's another flawed human being and she's perfectly happy to admit it. But that interview, if you guys haven't seen it, definitely check it out, with Sean Hannity. Other than Sean Hannity interrupting her too much for my liking, it was absolutely amazing and genuine. What were your takeaways from that?
My takeaway was she is a human being. I mean, I know it's... We do it a little bit too much. I do it a lot myself, just having to give this disclaimer about like our president and people like, listen, he's not a perfect man. Like, who is? We're all here. The whole problem here is that there is this ridiculous act. Whenever we look at what's going on in the news, when the ratings come out, I know that at the top right hand corner of Drudge Report, maybe once or twice a month, we see what the ratings are. And you know what is always beating everybody on the internet? What always beats the New York Times and CNN and Drudge itself? It's porn. It's porn. It's like everybody on Twitter that is condemning people like Roseanne Barr and Donald Trump are condemning them with one hand. With one hand, okay? They're tweeting with one hand and they're watching porn with the other.
Well, they advertise your show in the comments section on some of those.
I try to. I try to tell people, please leave the link to my show in the comments section of your favorite porno. I would love to see that pop up. But that's what I'm talking about here. She is genuine. And it's just whatever's there, you take it or leave it. There's really nothing beyond this. And I think that... And you can tell when somebody is just laying bare whatever, and when somebody is really trying to control a narrative and be able to control and direct where a conversation goes. You can tell the difference between someone who is just looking to be honest and just allow you to place them wherever the hell you want to place them in your mind and your heart. And that's exactly what I got away from her. She was fantastic, and I've become more and more of a fan of her than ever before.
I love Roseanne. Brendan Dilley, who's with me on Your Voice America, had a chance to go out to California to her studio, and she interviewed him, and it was such a good conversation. I've had conversations with Roseanne. Okay, she's absolutely wonderful. She is so smart. She understands what's happening like real people do every day. She's not some pretentious celebrity. I couldn't believe the first time I talked to her. I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy. I just had a conversation with Roseanne. That's nuts. But it was like having a conversation with a friend that I've known for years and years. She was very vulnerable in that interview, but not in a bad way. She was just being normal, just the same way, Frank, I thought, as Jim Jordan was in his interview with Bret Baier. Do you remember that one? Did you see it?
I did not.
Oh, my gosh. It was the day after he had that whole scandal come out with him and his wrestling coach days. And his nephew had just passed away in a car accident. And he was on Bret Baier trying to say, like, it's just not true. None of it's not true. Like, and you could just see people are sick of this facade. Like, even when Carter Page gets interviewed, we won't get started on him, but same thing, fake ass crap. People can see it now. It's like all of a sudden a light bulb went off with people and they can just feel when someone's being straight with them and someone's being genuine. That Roseanne interview with Hannity last night was hands down one of the best interviews that I've seen of a celebrity in a really long time. And how do you not believe her? The video she put out about Valerie Jarrett before she put out the apology video that was formal was hysterical. I'm sorry.
Mm.
What did you think? I thought the bitch was white.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I love that one, too, because it's just it was exactly what I was thinking, too, because I'm like, wait a second. When I heard about this, I saw the Valerie, the VJ tweet about Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes. And then I'm saying to myself, what the hell's what's the hullabaloo about? Why is everybody going so crazy?
I had no idea she was black.
And then I went and I looked and everybody was like, well, how racist. I said, racist? Isn't she just Iranian? Isn't she just Persian? And I'm looking at this and all of a sudden they were like, oh, well, she has black parents. I'm like, what? This Carol Brady looking? I mean, she's got the Carol Brady hair and the face. I mean, there's nothing. Here's what it is. Most of the people who jumped on Roseanne for being a racist, it was such a convenient find for them, because I can guarantee you that over three quarters of the people who used this to destroy her and in turn conflate Roseanne's view of the world with the age of Trump. All those people who used to destroy her show that was really, really starting to shake things up and also conflate that with Trumpism. All those people, they saw racism and Valerie Jarrett's ethnic background as such a convenient find. But nobody knew about that. Nobody.
Like James Gunn, you mean? We could talk about him in a second. I think it was very interesting to see how they all did that. They were racist when they did it. I mean, people don't see that as a hypocrisy. The hypocrisy of it. It's funny. I'm going to go a little off here. I was watching. I have like a guilty pleasure, Frank. I like the show Big Brother. I really like it. I think it's an amazing thought experiment. Every season, it's a really good way to understand human nature, how people act and react. Do you know about the show at all?
No, but I know it exists. And I have a couple people in my life that watch it.
It's basically they throw all these people in a house together. They record them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can watch it basically 24 hours a day if you wanted to on an app and kind of see how these people tick. But they have to vote people out every week. So you see these like strategic alliances being formed and who's going to backstab who and how people play and who lies the whole time and who doesn't. For me, it's like more of like an exercise in understanding the human psyche than anything else. But I watched the show, and last night there's this guy on who happened to have been interviewed by Fleckus, the little short dude.
Oh, yes. Yep.
His name is JC, and Fleckus Talks, who you're friends with, interviewed him in one of his videos, and he happens to be a Trump fan, but he is, listen to this, he is about, ooh.
That's a good one.
Yeah. This is so cool. I'm actually kind of excited about the thunder. He's about 4'11", maybe 5 foot tall. He's white, but he's Hispanic. He's very light skinned, but he's a Hispanic and he's gay. Okay.
He interviewed him at the Los Angeles Pride March.
Yes. Yeah. And he was having a conversation yesterday with an African-American woman who said, Something about the M, and they blanked out the word, so apparently it's very offensive to people, but they used the midget word to she used the midget word to describe him and people that are his height. And he began to try to explain to her why that was hurtful and why it was, he's like, you know, like in the gay community, the F word, and in the African American community, the N word, but he didn't say the N word, he said the word. And she just flipped out. You're not allowed to say that. You can't say that ever again. And what he was trying to do was demonstrate to her how offensive the M word is to people like him. He's not a midget. He's not a little person. He's normal. He's just very short. Not normal, but not genetically altered in that way. He's just very short.
Is he a dwarf?
No, he's not. Okay. He's just a very short man. And she's trying to say how, like, her whole life she grew up in a white community and she was persecuted because of her skin color. And that word is so hurtful. And in the back of my mind, she's saying how empowered she is to be a black woman. And I'm like, but you're assigning this power to a word that this man who is a gay Hispanic, I mean, people mistake him for a dwarf all the time. And he's trying to tell you why it is the word you use to describe him is just as hurtful as what you're doing right now. And it was lost on her.
It's the progressive stack. Listen, it's the progressive stack. This is the reason why you can lambaste and you can crucify so many people if you are in a position like Joy Reid. There's no reason why Joy Reid is still on the air, why she still has her show after all of her tweets and all of her blog postings have been dug up with the homophobic remarks and the jokes and all that. There's no reason except for the fact that in the progressive world, if you are a black woman, you are at the top of the pecking order.
She has privilege.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You want to talk about people that want to go out there and strip you of privilege or identify privilege. They're creating a society where, especially with feminism, I always say that feminism ended up becoming is this mechanism for assigning privilege to certain people and to assign responsibility to others. There's equality is nowhere yeah. in the picture.
Listen, I have no problem with people of color, you know, being proud of their heritage. I'm not against any of that. I just feel like it's very clear to me that when people use certain words in conversation and other ways, that you have to assign some context to it. It was very clear that this man was not saying that word to offend her personally, and she made it about that instead of saying, well, that word doesn't mean anything to me, I'm not going to assign any power to what that person said. Like, you know, do you think that the reason why, you know, obviously Valerie Jarrett used this as an opportunity to come out against Roseanne and say how hurt she was, but do you think maybe the reason why nobody knew really that she was an African-American woman is because she never made it a point to tell anyone? Like, she didn't make that a focus. I've never heard Valerie Jarrett ever make a speech or say anything about her heritage as a black woman. Have you?
No.
So maybe that's why nobody knew, because she didn't make it like her identity.
I'm pretty sure that if Valerie Jarrett and Condoleezza Rice if we can do a body swap, I'm pretty sure that Roseanne would have never gone and ventured into Planet of the Apes territory. I'm pretty sure she would have never, ever thought about, even if she had a political point to be made, I am pretty sure that nobody would venture into that territory. We are talking about two completely different scenarios here. Yeah. I don't think Condoleezza Rice could be the biggest liberal Muslim Brotherhood sympathizing woman on the face of the earth. And she could have been high ranking in the Obama administration. And nobody in the right mind would have written a tweet like Roseanne did. No. It's not the scenario with Valerie Jarrett. Okay, so but like I said, it's convenient. Nobody cares. This is about supporting a view, a worldview, and a a version of reality, a version of reality that needs to be supported and needs to be all conclusions need to support that bias at all costs. No other outside information should be allowed in. No other outside considerations should be made. That's it. We really are coming down to it's a cult-like environment out there. And I hope there's a way to break it down eventually.
Yeah, we're out of time now, but I definitely think that we could have inserted this whole Hollywood conversation in here with the James Gunn and the Rick and Mortys of the world, you know, creators of the world, and had a conversation about that. You spent some time on it on your show. I spent some time on it on my channel. We had a little bit of a different perspective on it, but not too far off. But we're
sad. You want to do 5 minutes? I don't care.
We can go a little over. I don't think we'd get in trouble. Would we get in trouble?
Who would get us in trouble?
I don't know. It's our show.
Yeah, no, it is your show.
My show, damn it.
No. It's my show, damn it.
You know, the reason why I do that is because of you. I'm afraid. Let me be honest, okay? If we're going to be honest. Okay. I'm afraid to say it's our show because I feel like you don't want me to.
No. Okay, well, let me just say I'm afraid to say it's our show because I can't, because I already have a show.
Well, so do I.
Yeah, but no, but you have, it's different. In my eyes, it's different because I have a show I do nightly. And whereas I don't consider your channel and your work to be a show, I almost feel like you have your own column. I almost feel like you have your own, I don't know. Like
you're
you
right.
Have you know, it's right. A different type of a presentation. So I really enjoy being the Robin to your Batman in this scenario, just in my own head. Maybe in a couple of months, all of our inhibitions are gone.
Because it's bothering me every time I want to say our, I say my, and then I feel selfish afterwards.
Don't worry about being selfish. You need this. I do it 5 nights a week.
Now that everybody has a window into the little host relationship, let's talk about this whole gun thing. What the hell? I lost my mind.
I know. I watched that one for sure.
And I would do it again in a heartbeat. I did this whole big long, please, I'm not going to rehash the whole thing here. You can go to my channel and listen to it. It says a rant, enough is enough. Because the basically what it comes down to is the argument against, like, people don't know, James Gunn tweeted out a series of very disgusting tweets about sex acts with children. Am I describing it adequately?
Yeah.
And he was called out on it. And there's now a petition with 300, and he was fired from his position as director of Guardians of the Galaxy. And the left went nuts about how the Nazis on the right are trying to take away free speech. And I made the argument that they're in a free market of ideas. There's consequences, and the free market takes care of these things by ostracizing the person that is immoral in their opinion and pushing them off to the side, never to be interacting with normal people again. And that's how it would work if there were anarchy.
Yeah.
You'd ostracize someone from your community that did something like that. It is literally never okay, in my opinion, to ever put sex jokes with children.
And I agree. And on that, I agree. And what I was, I think that there's a lot of, it's funny, the last week or so, the hypocrisy that's been dug up, that's been nice. That's been great to see people hoisted up by their own petard, where you have James Gunn types. You have people that are being, first of all, we're just talking about Roseanne. This is a woman who is castigated by so many people demanding, get her off, get her off, get her off. And now we see tweets that have been dug up from years ago of a person who is at the helm of a very, very popular and successful movie series. And they're concerning jokes of all types of sex acts with underage boys and girls and just weird shit. And, you know, To compare the two between what Roseanne said and what the hell was being said in these James Gunn tweets, and then for people to say that this was a, you know, how dare you? Don't fire him. Don't fire him. It's a free speech issue. Now, I focused in on the free speech issues, the free speech issue that. But it was not so much in. It's definitely not supporting his right to say, you know, make these horrible jokes. Like as far as, you know, supporting what he said. But as far as the act itself, I said that because and now since then I have seen, you know, as Rob said last night, where there's smoke, there's fire. And he is shoulder to shoulder with some really weird, creepy people who have had a lot of legal problems with child abuse, with, you know, pedophilia, child pornography, all that stuff. So this is the overarching story here is it is just more commentary on the kind of mindset that is driving these cultural institutions on college campuses, in government, in media, and of course Hollywood, because they are all sorority sisters of each other. They go to each other's aid. When Harvey Weinstein was brought out into the open last year and all the shit started coming down on them, everybody coalesced around Hollywood and they tried to deflect away from what was a widespread male and female humanitarian crisis in Hollywood and this entire culture out there. They coalesced around Hollywood and tried to prop it up by launching this phony feminist Me Too movement to say that, oh, this is about feminism and women and all that stuff, even though these are the people that were leading the charge were those who weren't saying anything while it was happening. So this is that is the overarching commentary we can see about the whole where there's smoke, there's fire. What I wanted to bring about was asking, is this really a, you know, getting away from James Gunn, is this really a place that we want to go to in digging up things on each other that we were saying 10 years ago in hopes that maybe we've become different people since then? And I'm like I said, getting away from James Gunn, like, you know, because most people, they indulge in, you know, ethnic jokes from time to time, you know, gay jokes.
Listen.
And, you know, it's, you know.
If I never called for Joy Reid to be fired over what we found that she said 10 years ago. That's the thing. Like, my issue with it is it's not going on a fishing expedition to find things from 10 years ago to get people fired with. Not to mention this man was 40 10 years ago. It's not like you do much changing between 40 and 50.
Right, right.
But it's the fact that this was about children is a, like, there is no negotiation. None. If they would have found him saying something about Muslims or gays or whatever, I would have been like, guys, come on, seriously? This was about kids. That's the only reason why I've been reacting as strongly as I have been. I don't care if somebody was using bad words about an adult 10 years ago. I don't think many of us would. And that's why I was trying to make the point that this is not, for me anyway, and I don't think it is for a lot of people, a political wedge issue. It's not about getting the left back using their rules. It's about the fact that there is a group of people, a very large group of people apparently, running around in Hollywood who are allegedly into all of this disgusting crap, making open jokes about pedophilia like it's nothing, like it doesn't matter, and then having people come to their aid and support them because maybe they changed. This isn't a homophobic slur or a joke about women. This is talking about kids touching your private parts and enjoying it.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. What I wanted to expand off of it, because that right there, I believe, is something that we can all agree on, except for the people who are now trying to juggle how they can spin this and draw lines of compromise within a political argument. Those people I don't even want to treat with. This is absolutely ridiculous, and it should not be forgiven in any way. But what I was trying, that's nice, good one. Mm-hmm. But what I was trying to say is that in this situation, what you have is almost like, you know, the people versus Larry Flint. It comes down to a situation of law versus taste. Did we in these tweets and all of these digging into James Gunn background, did we find allegations of actual physical assaults and child abuse and anything like that? Or did we just see awful, awful attempts at sick humor that did not land very far and actually are just your stomach turning? And since the latter is true, all we know is that the consequences that could possibly be laid on top of him are social and professional.
Yep.
Professionally, he already had consequences, and socially, that's what's here. Now, the second that child abuse is unearthed, I, like I said before, I will be the first one online to buy popcorn at the public castration. Now, but with what I wanted to bring up here, Tracy, and here's the question I'll ask you and pose it to the audience as well. The bigger thing that this made me think about is, for example, just recently we had this Brewers, this Milwaukee Brewers pitcher, Josh Hader. Okay. Now, Josh Hader, somebody dug up tweets of his that he said when he was like 17 years old.
Yep.
that were, you know, racist in nature. I think one tweet just said KKK. Either way, what this whole James Gunn thing started making me think about was we are now, myself included, we are looking at the raising of generations of Americans, of just people in general, all over the world, who have been publishing and spilling their guts, their thoughts, their jokes, these passing thoughts that we usually have kept to ourselves at one point and never had anybody know about it. Now we are compelled to spill our guts into this abyss of social media from the time that we're so young that we don't know anything about the world until our dying breaths. People are literally living and dying on the internet now. And Facebook eventually one day is going to be a virtual graveyard. Think about the millions of people who have died since Facebook has opened up, that their accounts are just there. They're just pretty much a memorial accounts now. And to think of people like Josh Hader, who had things that he said when he was 17 brought up that don't have anything to do with child molestation or anything like that, but still things that he has to atone for all these years later when you realize, oh, wow, I was fucking stupid.
Totally different circumstances.
Right, but the underlying thing that I asked here is the practice of starting to dig on anybody you don't like now, is that something that is going to be positive in the long run? Because putting aside uncovering references to child rape, which is something that I think is exponentially worse than anything else. This, you can destroy somebody's life by taking something completely innocent out of context too. Something that is much more benign than joking about or trying to joke about the things that James Gunn was doing. I just think that the precedent itself is not going to be positive over the long run.
I think that what we have to do is make it so that it doesn't matter when it's things like that. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, people are going to do that regardless. But I think that we have to, as a society, stop being so PC that things like that don't matter so much now. It's been weaponized. And we have to de-weaponize it so that when we find tweets about pedophilia, they make a difference. You know, people are excusing this now because of the environment that we're in, and that's inexcusable. So I think that because it doesn't make a difference, you know, because of this, because of the environment we're in, because people are so offended by every little microaggression that somebody might make, we assign the power to that stuff, as I assign the power of my voice to making sure that people, you know, hear that the things that he said can never be said and be accepted by anybody. It's just a line we can't cross as a society. Mm. I would also say, listen, the dude was 17 years old. Okay. He wasn't making jokes, like we say, about this topic. It was, you know, who knows what changes he's gone through since then. They're different things. And I right. think that's the reality of it, especially in a time where, and we'll cut because we've gone long, long now, but especially yep. in a time where, you know, we know what's happening. We're uncovering all kinds of research and connections, and there are victims stepping forward. And we know that this is, it seems probable that this is a cultural thing that's going on in very high levels of government and Hollywood and upper echelons of power that we need to stop. I understand your philosophical argument about doing that, but I also understand the value in making sure that this is exposed for what it is.
Yeah, no, and I agree, and it needs to be. I agree.
Well, guys, wow, what a way to end. This was a good one. I'm hoping you... What?
Bonus time. They got bonus time.
Yeah, bonus time and extra thunder, which is cool. You guys, thank you for joining us this week on the Dark to Light podcast, which can be found on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. For now, it's goodbye from...
Frankie Val.
And Tracy Beans. Have a great weekend.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Hey, boys and girls, do me a favor. Check out Linky Murray. You may have seen her on Next Food Network Star, but I've seen her in Africa.
This is why I love going and cooking for our military troops and women. Because, yes, they love the fact that you are Kiwi, but they love the fact that we go out there and cook for them and bring them a little bit of home more than they do, you know, some bands that go out there. I spoke to a couple of, actually she was a helicopter pilot, and she took her patch off of her arm and gave it to me. And I just stood there like almost in tears and went, you know, why would you give this to me? You know, why would you not? And her words was like, she said, Linky, we can get bands and we get like really great artists and things that come out here. She said, but when you guys come, when Miss Lords come and they cook for us, we get a taste of home. We get that comfort. And you know what? I love that about being a chef. It's because we bring, number one, we bring different cultures together. You think about it. You get somebody from Asia, you may not understand a word what they say, but if they cook us something, we're going to talk about that food, whether we understand each other or not, but we're going to talk about it. So it's number one, it brings cultures together. Number two, it gives you a comfort zone that cannot be fulfilled any other way. And that's why they love us going out there to these different places.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.